Welcome to All Write in Sin City, a podcast about writers and writing in the Windsor, Detroit region. Your podcasters today are
Irene Moore Davis, author, educator, and local historian.
Sarah Jarvis, former bookseller, publishing rep, and literary festival chair.
And me, Kim Conklin, Windsor-based writer and filmmaker.
Carlos Anthony is a screenwriter, producer, and novelist who addresses the historically silenced experiences of Black men. With a background in advertising and marketing, he learned effective communication and storytelling. Through diverse work experiences, he empathized with individuals from various backgrounds, observing the impact of factors like education, class, culture, and immigration status on masculinity. As a survivor of loss, abuse, and addiction, Carlos draws from his personal struggles, using art as a healing tool to break generational curses. He lives in Windsor, Ontario with his family and is involved in various initiatives, including directing operations at the Windsor Black International Film Festival and co-founding the Millennial X Filmmaking Program. Carlos' creative work spans web series, short films, best-selling novels, essays, and viral short stories series, exploring themes such as Black adolescence, fatherhood, relationships, addiction, and more. Shades of Black, published in 2023 by James Lorimer and Company, is his first novel. Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for that introduction. You did a great job.
How and when did you first discover your love of writing?
Well, if I'm being honest, I have a learning disability. And when I was younger, my parents didn't have the tools or resources to get me tested or to find out what my challenges were. So I was abused and I was shamed. And that was their way of trying to get me to kind of persevere through my challenges. So I was actually quite discouraged from reading and writing. The first time that I was actually writing was when I was about 4 years old and my father had just passed away. And I was writing letters to Jesus, and it was a way for me to get like comfort and a bit of understanding on why he was gone. And then other than having to write for like school, I didn't actually start really writing until I was getting tremors in my hands, and I was in a really toxic work environment. And I went to go see a naturopath because I just couldn't control my emotions. I was just having these like breakdowns, and then with the tremors, and I was just very moody. So when I saw the naturopath, one of the things that he told me to do was to start journaling, because he had found that I had a lot of suppressed trauma. And from me writing my memoir, I ended up getting commissioned to do a short story series after sharing the memoir at Draft Reading. And that short story series called Pretty Boys Don't Cry went viral. And then from there is when I got my book deal. And I mean, that's just, the rest is history from there.
That's amazing. And thank you for persisting. Prolifically through the years, you have been a screenwriter and producer. Now you've written a novel and short stories, essays, films, web series. My goodness. How do you carve out time for all of these endeavors? Do you tend to tackle one project at a time, or can you work on various forms of writing simultaneously?
At first, when I first started like believing in myself as an artist, actually, the truth is, I didn't believe in myself as an artist when I first started. So what I was doing was, instead of putting myself on and being my own savior, I was anticipating or hoping that someone would be my savior and that they would put me on and give me the opportunity to kind of be this like superstar. And it didn't work out that way. So I started burning myself out by writing projects for other people as a way to kind of master my craft and to expand my reach as a creative. And the web series that I developed was actually a way for me to practice everything that I was learning from my mentor. When I started, it was really rejection that kind of pushed me into becoming more independent. And with my experience with like creatives in Toronto, there's a crabs in a barrel mentality. Not a lot of people are trying to like help one another so that we can all succeed. And I was successful in getting grants. With those grants, I was able to pay mentors to teach me how to write a novel, how to go ahead and write a screenplay and then produce it and make films. There was even some heartbreaks in those processes because one of my mentors who kind of supported me in my earlier career as an author, they actually tried to bully me into giving up my intellectual property when I had aid them in receiving $125,000 from Canada Council funding into a project that they had ended up producing without me because of the fact that I didn't want to give up my intellectual property. So as far as to answering your question, how I started was based on like burnout. Now that I've like had this experience and my book had become a bestseller, all of these accolades, the validation and the affirmation is really what has kind of put me or pushed me into a position where I do believe in myself fully now. And now I'm being more intentional with the projects that I do.
Well, now that you do have a little more experience under your belt and you are more intentional, mm-hmm. how does your writing process shift depending on which genre you're focusing in? That's a challenge for all kinds of multi-genre writers. Is there a certain routine that works well for fiction as opposed to an essay or a film script? Or is there a particular place or time of day that you work?
The best time for me to work, I have a family. And my family loves me so much that they just enjoy taking up as much time as they possibly can. So I tend to do my writing in the mornings between like 3:30 in the morning and 7 a.m. when everybody is like sleeping. So I get up and I started the Walter Mosley way of writing about 1,000 words a day. But now I'm up to like about like 5,000 words a day. And as far as like, I guess, like what time I like carve out, I actually work with my publisher. So my publisher, James Lorimer, a publishing company, they put out about anywhere between 12 and like 20 books per year. And they take their time getting back to me when I go ahead and I give them a draft. So while I'm waiting for their draft, because I have anxiety, what I go ahead and I do is I actually start working on like the next book. And what I do is I use my Canada Council funding from like research and creation grants. I use that money to go ahead and pay editors. So that way I can go ahead and always have something being looked at while I'm like waiting. So that's kind of like my process. But this year I have Shades of Black 2 that's going to be coming out. I'm on the seventh draft for that, or we'll be working on the seventh draft for that. And there's two other novels that I've already like drafted the first and second draft of that I'll be working on this year. And hopefully they'll be coming out in 2025. I'm currently in negotiations with a couple publications. Now that I have better knowledge and I'm not just like giving everything up, now that I have a little bit of leverage, I'm just going to take a little bit more time with the negotiations instead of being so eager just to get a book deal.
Wow, that is fascinating. I'm so intrigued by the 5,000 words per day. Do you find that you just sort of push it out there and worry about making it pretty later? Or do you find that it's pretty refined as it emerges?
Yeah, so I definitely just like write whatever comes to mind. I don't focus on like making it pretty. For me, writing is really like healing. Just like R&B singers, when they write like their best work, when they're going through heartbreak, that's whenever my wife and I are going through an argument, or maybe she said something to me that didn't meet my expectations. That's when like my best writing comes out. And I also do a lot of like self-reflection. I have a lot to prove to myself as an artist, because I'm a full-time artist. I don't have like a 9 to 5. I mean, I guess technically my millennial ex is kind of like my 9 to 5, even though I don't really have those 9 to 5 like hours. But this year we're planning on hiring 2 people to go ahead and kind of replace myself and my business partner, so that I can just be like a full-time artist and just focus on like creating art and just making impactful art. Because I have a lot to say, and I really feel like I've been silenced for years between being like a child and just being like an adult. I've been conditioned to conform to what everybody else has wanted me to be, and I've been just really been on this like journey of like self-discovery, and I really want to be the person that I know that I can be now, which is my best self.
So, speaking of impactful art, let's talk about Shades of Black. The dedication reads, "To all the young Black boys across the world who are challenged with being themselves because they desire to be accepted for who they are and fit in, I want you all to know that you are enough. This book is for you." What was the spark that motivated you to write this book?
I would probably say my son. I have a 9-year-old son. He's Carlos the third. And when I look at him, I see a better version of myself. He has a two-parent household. His parents are very supportive of him. And when I reflect on like what it was like for me growing up, I didn't have the encouragement to like be myself. I was very discouraged. There was a lot of shame. There was a lot of abuse. So as a result, I ended up conforming in order to appease others, and I lost myself. I forgot who I was or who I could be. So with this book, I'm hoping that people that read this book, especially the young boys, that they see the mistakes that I've made growing up, and that they make better choices that I've made or that I would have made.
Carlos, across the landscape of YA literature, do you find that there is a dearth of books written specifically for young Black boys?
I feel like it's getting better. There's a few authors, Black authors, that are starting to get more opportunities, and I'm starting to see that there are more books being published by Black men. This wasn't the case when I was a teenager. I guess, in essence, we kind of have to thank the impact that George Floyd's death made, because unfortunately, through his death is where we started to get a lot of these different opportunities, which is also sad because there were many Black men that were being murdered before he had died. And there were many Black men that were murdered even after he has died. It's just his death, the way that it was televised and how it went viral, is what really made the impact and has made like a big push in DEI, which kind of worries me because, now there's been a lot of like rumors circulating how, the DEI movement is, starting to be pulled away. And I'm getting worried that some of those opportunities are not going to be available to Black authors, and that once again, our stories are going to be silenced. So for me, my goal, because of the fact that out of the 100% of books that come out, 95% of them are from like white authors. And of the 5%, there's only 1% that are from Black authors. So my goal is to go ahead and expand that, not just by writing more books myself, but also by providing opportunities for other Black authors and authors from marginalized backgrounds to get published. And I did that this year by allowing 5 people, to get published with my publisher. So I'm hoping that they will also go ahead and bring more authors from marginalized backgrounds. And as I continue to work with other publishers, I'm hoping I can bring more opportunities for them as well.
With all of these themes, the novel, a novel that you have written that touches on racism, poverty, community violence, domestic abuse, mental health, police community relations, so many other themes that could become overwhelming were it not for your lead character, Romero, the glue, that character is the glue holding all of this together. So how did this character first appear to you? How did he take shape? And what did you learn from him as his story evolved?
Oh, man. So it's funny because when I was first writing Shades of Black, it was basically in memoir format, but written in third person. So instead of it saying Romero's name, it actually had my name. And then my publisher, because I don't write outlines, I never learned how to write like an outline. So for me, writing an outline is my first draft. So when I write my first draft, that's when I kind of like, after that draft, I kind of go in and polish it up and make changes. So the first initial draft had the real names of all the characters that are in the book. So the book's actually based on real life experiences of myself, my friends, and some of my family members. So as I was writing the book, it really was, there's a lot of things that I had to like take out because the publisher was like, this is way too depressing. And there were some events that had happened and they just didn't feel like it was going to be well received from the audience. And I mean, it's the same thing with the second book as well. So I use as much as like my own experiences and the people that, because a lot of my friends from high school, they're not alive or they were incarcerated. So they don't have the opportunity to kind of tell these stories. So this is kind of my way of using my privilege and my platform to be able to share our stories and experiences. So all of this is really based on myself and the people that were close to me at this time when I was in high school. And that's basically kind of how the story kind of came about. As far as what I learned from Romero, I just learned how like how naive he is and how much he really just wants to like fit in. And really a lot of that really just comes from the rejection that he experiences, not just from his family, but also like his community. For me, when I was younger, my parents didn't want me to be anything like them. They didn't want me to speak with an accent. They really wanted me to conform because to them, me conforming and developing this elite type of mentality among my like Black peers, they thought was going to go ahead and make me more successful. So with me transitioning from a predominantly white school where I'm like one out of three Black kids, and I'm looking down on my other Black peers because of the fact that they're fitting the quote unquote stereotype, and then coming to the school where I'm surrounded with more Black people, it was a huge culture shock for me because in order for me to go ahead and survive, especially at this time where we're dealing with the Crips and the Bloods and we're living in the Jamestown community, I couldn't be who my parents wanted me to be in the school and survive or even thrive, right? So in order for me to kind of fit in, I had to kind of like change. And again, I was finding myself conforming, which again, I really do want the readers, especially like the Black boys that read this book, who have some of the same experiences that I have, to not conform and to be themselves. It's okay to like anime. It's okay to like reading books. It's okay to not want to have a relationship and be, you know, with girls. And it's okay to explore other forms of music and not have to like enjoy like hip hop music and the degrading things that they talk about in their messaging.
This book is receiving a lot of positive attention. Can you share a bit about the reception that Shades of Black has received? And what about that has delighted you the most in that reaction?
So my expectations for Shades of Black when it first came out were very low. And I was like, let me just be happy with the fact that I'm a published author. Because for someone who's coming from like a marginalized background, from two, you know, immigrant parents with a learning disability, just being able to write a book and get published is already a dream. And then having the international distribution, already a dream. This book was sold out in pre-orders. The publisher, they made the hardcovers limited edition. So they had like a small print run. I think it was like maybe 2,500 books. So when I first like was on the site and like people were messaging me and they're like, hey, we're trying to get a copy of your book. And it's saying that it's temporarily out of stock. With me not knowing any better, I was like upset with the publisher. And I was like, guys, why isn't my book available? I really want communication. I have people that are like, they want to purchase this book. And I'm like, if people are inconvenienced, then it's going to delay them from wanting to purchase the book. Turns out that the book was actually sold out. And then it was the second week that on Amazon that I saw that I was I was like number two for the bestsellers list. And then I think every week for like 31 weeks, my book was just sold out on Amazon and like most bookstores. It was like the second most gifted book in Canada. So for me, like this is all like a dream, and I'm still waiting for someone to like pinch me so that I can like wake up and reality and see what reality is like. But this really just feels like a dream. I'm overwhelmed with gratitude for all of my supporters. I'm really excited about the second book. It's an 8-book series, so I'm really looking forward to just expanding my base of supporters. And more importantly, I'm really hoping that it changes lives. I really hope that a lot of the boys that read this book are able to kind of see the bad choices that I made and are able to look at themselves and be able to make better decisions and better choices.
So that's really exciting about the sales and marketing aspect and how popular and successful the book has been. I think in terms of the reaction, I'm really curious about what sort of responses and what sort of feedback you're getting from the young people who read the book and sort of what they're telling you about their experience with the book.
So I was at an influencer mixer for Family Fuse back in October. And it was nothing but like teenagers and other entrepreneurs. And it was basically like speed dating where we were like moving different tables, and I was able to kind of like chat with some of the teens. And I was talking to some of the teens about the book. Surprisingly, like for me in Windsor, because, you know, I'm just in Windsor, I don't know a lot of people and I don't know who knows me. But it was really refreshing to hear that some of them have actually like read the book. And as I was kind of having conversations with some of the teens over at like Kennedy, Walkerville, and I can't remember the other one, a lot of the teens were saying that they could really connect and relate with the story, because even though at this influencer it was a lot of like Black students, a lot of them said that they were in schools where there weren't a lot of like Black kids, so they also felt like they had to like kind of conform in order to like fit in. And a lot of them just felt like this book was just making them feel a little less lonely. They felt like there were other people that were going through these experiences, but there weren't any books that were like writing about it. Now, no one in Windsor has told me that they were assaulted by like a police officer in Windsor. They said that, you know, the police in Windsor are pretty okay. But I mean, there's been people in like Kitchener that have tagged me about their experiences with their like young ones experiencing police harassment. And my book just kind of makes them feel like at least someone is speaking on their behalf, because there's this kind of stigma that just because you're here in Canada, that a lot of the stuff here in Canada, or a lot of the stuff that happens in the States with the way that Black people are treated by the police, that it doesn't exist in Canada. And it does. So with me writing this book and with Black kids experiencing that kind of harassment and abuse by law enforcement, it makes them feel a little less alone.
Yeah, really interesting. Police community relations in Windsor are as good as they are because of many years of labor and engagement on the part of the Black community, by the way.
Okay.
But we're glad that we have arrived at a point of a pretty safe environment. So we mentioned earlier you're engaged in a lot of different forms of storytelling. Often we ask writers whether they're working on any new writing projects, but for you, we'll word the question a little bit differently. What other exciting initiatives do you have on the go right now?
So we have Millennial X. Last year for Millennial X, we celebrated 1 year of our filmmaking program and partnership with CBC. We've supported over 100 people from marginalized backgrounds. We've helped many of them receive grants of hundreds of thousands of dollars through Canada Council, Canada Media Fund, OAC, Toronto Art Council, and many others. We've produced three short film productions. I think our biggest production in length was about 38 minutes. And then we had a few shorts. We also did Nuit Blanche, which is the biggest art festival in Canada. It's a 12-hour festival. There was like 200 applications, 32 exhibits, four of them were ours. And one of our exhibits was 12 hours of short films where we screened over 30 short films that were between 5 and like 30 minutes. So those are like some of the things that we did this year. We're looking to go ahead and do it again for 2024, and we want to make it bigger and better. I also did, because I'm an author, I also did 12 hours of Black literature. Because I didn't find that in my experience going to festivals that there wasn't a lot of like diversity. So I wanted to go ahead and kind of highlight more Black artists. But this year, I'm going to be working with different publishers, and we're going to be opening it up to BIPOC authors and poets as well. So I'm hoping that with that, we are just able to like touch more people and just kind of unifying more people in the art space.
That sounds amazing. I can't wait to see what's coming from you for 2024. Would you like to read something for our listeners?
Yes, sure. I definitely can. So I'm going to be reading from chapter 11. Chapter 11 from Shades of Black is called You Wouldn't Believe Me If I Told You. And I'm going to be starting from, let's see, where should I start? Okay. I'm going to be starting from page 103. Desmond shrugs and then walks back to his seat to sit. Romero visualizes going into the bathroom stall and stashing the gun inside the toilet bowl. He exhales deeply and walks back to his desk. He grabs his backpack and puts it over his shoulder, heading for the exit. Are you okay? Asks Mr. Logan. Romero turns around, pulls his stomach, and looks at him. I'll be fine. Just need to go to the bathroom. Mr. Logan makes a face and gestures for Romero to leave. He walks out of the room and sees police officers opening lockers and searching through them. Shit, they're so close. He speed walks past them, avoiding detection as they search a student's locker. He enters the boys' bathroom, looking frantically for an empty stall. He finds the last door is open. He enters the stall, locks the door, and rolls up his sleeves to place the gun inside the toilet tank, accidentally breaking the chain. He puts his backpack over his shoulder and puts the lid back on the toilet. He unlocks the door and walks out of the stall. He washes his hands and exits. The police see Romero exit the bathroom with his backpack. They make eye contact before Romero breaks eye contact and walks back to class. "Hey," says a police officer, trying to get Romero's attention. He ignores the police and continues to walk, but increases his pace. He feels anxious. They're probably calling another kid. The police officer increased their pace too. Romero quickly looks back. He sees them catching up. Shit, they're coming for me. He starts remembering images from the viral murder of George Floyd, where the police officer held his knee over his neck. He's scared. He starts to run. They chase after him, tackle him to the ground, and pin his arm behind his back while putting their knees to the back of his neck. He screams loudly as he gasps for air. "Is this how I'm going to die?" he thinks as the officer's knee is pushed against his neck. His classmates gather at the door with their cell phones out, recording the interaction. One of the officers grabs his backpack, unzips it, and empties everything onto the floor, while the other officer moves his knee from his neck to his back. Romero begins coughing after finally being able to breathe. The officer holding the backpack redirects the students in the hallway with their cameras out. "All right, keep it moving. There's nothing to see," says the officer. After thoroughly going through the backpack, there's no gun. The officer looks up to his partner. "There's nothing in here." The police officer picks up Romero's books and puts them back in the bag. The other officer stands and brings Romero up from the floor. He stands him up. He hands him his backpack and then dusts off his uniform. "Sorry, kid. You shouldn't have run. You look suspicious. At least you're innocent. No harm, no foul," says the officer. Romero is shaking like a leaf, still processing what happened. He holds his bag and stands against the wall, watching the officers continue the search as if he hadn't just been traumatized. He tries to zip the bag up, but sees the zipper is broken. He stands still, and then tears start to roll down his cheek. He wipes the tears from his eyes and looks around at all the students filming him and judging him. He continues to replay being tackled by the police in his mind. He loosens his collar and touches his neck, remembering what it felt like to be without air. John walks down the hall with his crew. They point at Romero, who is wiping tears from his face. "Look at this pussy crying," says John, and his friends, who join in, pointing and laughing at Romero before he runs out of the school.
Very powerful storytelling. The new book is Shades of Black, published by James Lorimer and Company. Thank you for joining us, Carlos Anthony.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. Look for more episodes of All Right in Sin City wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out our website, allrightinsincity.com. For information and announcements of new podcasts, sign up to our email list or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.